When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
And good Tuesday to you and yours. You got Chad Brown and Freddie Coleman in for Mike Greenberg. Thanks for joining us on Greeny on the mighty ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and always tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. It's always cool when Chad Brown and I get a chance to do a radio show, especially today, because he played 15 years in the National Football League. Chad, I'm going to need about as much experience of going through playoff situations like we saw last night involving the Knicks and Sixers and the Lakers and Nuggets.
I am looking forward to this, Freddie, to relay some of these playoff thoughts to you. And in the end, it's always going to be about the team that knows how to finish, as we saw last night.
No doubt about that. You can weigh in at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Which Game 2 loss was more devastating for whom? What happened to the Sixers in Madison Square Garden versus New York, or the Lakers out west in Chad Brown's town of Denver against the Nuggets? Because that's all a part of this.
Here we go!
Only one place to start.
DiVincenzo for three in the lead! 13 seconds to go! Back-to-back threes with a steal in between! And this place is going wild!
Jumper Murray! Got it the horn! Denver bounce the comeback! 101! 99 is the final, and the Lakers can take that out on the way out.
Well, all righty then. The very unbiased call in the Altitude Radio Network involving the Denver Nuggets beating the Lakers. You heard the call on ESPN Radio. Before that, the New York Knicks beating the Philadelphia 76ers. Third day in the last 25 postseasons. Multiple game-winning field goals in the last 15 seconds, and LeBron James was on the right side of the other instances when it happened twice before. But, Chad, I'll throw that at you. Both of these teams, the Lakers and the Sixers, now down 0-2 in games that they had won. The Sixers had a chance to have that game winning late, and the Lakers had a 20-point lead in the second half. So which Game 2 loss was more devastating for whom and why?
I got to go with my Lakers here. I think the Lakers knew it was obviously going to be an uphill climb for them to win this series. And based off of how well they played for the first three quarters yesterday, mm-hmm. I can imagine in their heads they were thinking, okay, we can play with this Nuggets team. We got a chance to win this series. Right. And to go down and have the Nuggets really just kind of snatch the victory from them. AD didn't score any points in the fourth quarter. The last minute buzzer beater there to get the win. Mm-hmm. Lakers got to be feeling quite devastated.
Yeah.
And again, for every professional athlete I've ever been around expects to win.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have a little bit of reality in the back of your head. You know how much of an uphill climb it's going to be
right.
If you're the Lakers facing the defending champion Denver Nuggets. And so to lose like that, I think it just takes more wind out of their sails versus a Sixers team, mm-hmm. which went into this series knowing they had a chance to win the series versus the Lakers knowing all things had to fall right for them to win the series.
I'm not going to say that you're wrong, but I'm going to go on the other side of that. And I know I don't want to do that to somebody who shall remain nameless, Cam Pratt, our producer, who's a Philadelphia 76ers fan, because there are people that take losses personally, and then there are cities that take losses personally when they lose to a team from a city that they can't stand. And that's where we are, Philadelphia versus New York, because everybody does not like Los Angeles on the West Coast. We get it. We understand that. But there's certain cities where it's like really a triangle of hate, Chad, when it comes to Philly, New York, and Boston.
Yeah.
When it involves their teams, it just magnifies itself. And if you're Philadelphia, having a 4-point lead, 5-point lead, less than a minute to play, you have a chance to sneak out of Madison Square Garden. When you did not know if Tyrese Maxey was going to play, he was not part of morning shoot around, missed it with an illness, and then he goes out there and he was balling out from the start, had 15 points in the fourth quarter, he was taking over things. You had that game won, and then 8 points in 27 seconds by the New York Knicks, especially when you're in that city of Philadelphia.
They want to be a basketball city on that same line with New York. And if you're a Sixers team and you lose that way and your center, Joel Embiid, starts saying, it wasn't our fault. It was the official's fault.
You think you guys had gotten a timeout in?
I mean, everybody on the floor was trying to call a timeout, myself included, Nico, coach on the sideline. But they didn't give it to us. But, you know, forget about the timeout. There's a bunch of fouls. You know, that's, yeah, like I said, that's unacceptable.
Here's the problem I have with this statement. When he said our coach is trying to call a timeout. If you knew that, then why are you not blocking out Isaiah Hartenstein from getting the basketball for that offensive rebound? If you were looking around to call a timeout or saying that I saw my coach call a timeout, then Joel Embiid, you weren't focusing on the main thing. And that was finding a way to get the basketball or finding a way to get a play. For him to put that kind of blame on the officials, that's why I think it's more devastating, because he knew that was a situation, as hobbled as he is, having a game one and trying to find a scapegoat why the 76ers could not finish the deal, having a 5-point lead with less than a minute to play.
Well, to give my Lakers take a little bit more credibility, well, LeBron, he also had his complaints about the officiating crew. So if you're going to point out Joel Embiid as if somehow, you know, his complaint is legitimate and then LeBron falls flat, he's also got a complaint. So officiating, I know we're going to get into it during the course of the show. At this point, I think almost every major sport is in a officiating crisis.
Sure.
Or at the cusp of an officiating crisis.
Okay.
And
Why do you think that is?
I think the technology just makes it so easy for us to, at home, to see exactly what happened, what could have happened.
Okay.
All those things. And in the past, there just wasn't as many cameras. We just couldn't see things as well.
Sure.
I think there's a societal pushback on the man of some sort. And whether we're talking about government and governmental conspiracies, and now we're talking about officiating and league and officiating conspiracies.
Sure.
I think there's a growing sentiment of that kind of thinking. And I also think, even though I'm not a person who goes into conspiracy theories and buys into all of that, I think it, even for me, it chips away at my respect and my deference to that group of people within each league and their ability to call a game accurately. Okay. I'm not going to say they're biased. I'm not going to say there's some conspiracy to have certain teams win or lose.
Right.
I just think that I can see their mistakes in a much more clear fashion than I ever could before, due to the cameras, due to the officiating, due to the replays, due to all that. And so it chips away at my confidence in their ability to do it over and over. And then when we see, now, Joel Embiid's got a point. I did see their coach trying to call a timeout multiple times last night.
Right.
LeBron's got a bit of a point, although the Lakers have shot 9 more free throw shots than the Nuggets have over the first 2 games.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a little bit of a selective kind of pointing out facts there. But I can see where both these guys are coming from. I can understand where they're coming from. Haven't been on the wrong side of some officiating calls as a player. I understand that. So, I think all leagues have to come up with ways to increase the public perception and confidence in their officiating.
Great stuff by Chad Brown. Joining me, Freddie Coleman, in for Mike Greenberg on Greeny on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance of motorcycles, boats, and RVs for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. You mentioned LeBron James. You're a Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah.
Had a 20-point lead in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like that was going to be it. They were going to break that losing streak of losing 9 in a row, and it didn't happen. And you mentioned that LeBron James had a problem with the officiating like this.
I don't understand what's going on in the replay center, to be honest. I think I said it this year or last year or whatever. D'Lo clearly gets hit in the face on a drive. What the f*** do we have a replay center if it's going to go? It doesn't make sense to me. It makes no sense to me. It bothers me. Sorry I didn't answer your question, but that shit is like. And then I just saw what happened with the Sixers Nick game too. What are we doing?
Okay, LeBron, what are you doing blowing a 20-point lead in the second half? But yet, and like Chad mentioned, you shot 9 more free throws than the Denver Nuggets. You had a wide open 3-point shot, wide open look after you were killing them in the fourth quarter, and you missed the 3-point shot. And then Jamal Murray made a tough shot over Anthony Davis. To me, it seems pretty weak coming from somebody of his stature to say, what are we doing and trying to shift the focus to the officiating, not finding fault of what you were not able to do as a basketball team. You didn't have Denver Nuggets on the ropes. You had them literally knocked out. You were treated like Haney got treated by Garcia over the weekend when it comes to boxing. You definitely had them knocked out from that standpoint. You allowed them to get up off the mat, and then they delivered the final knockout blow. And I get it, Chad. You want to make sure your team knows that you have each other's back. And, hey, it's not our fault, guys. We were playing 5-on-8 down the stretch if you're in Philadelphia or you're in Los Angeles. But the fact of the matter is it was inconsistent officiating on both sides between the Sixers and the Knicks. It was not inconsistent officiating in favor of Denver against the Los Angeles Lakers. And you had a wide-open look, LeBron James. Wide open, the game tied, and you had a chance to put that game away. You didn't do it. And your team was up by 20 points and couldn't put them away. Didn't do it. If you're the Sixers, you had a 5-point lead. You allowed the Knicks to do to you what Reggie Miller did to my Knicks way back when the Pacers scored 8 points in a less amount of time. So when you have those kind of responses from two stars, the main stars of their teams, at a certain point, handle it or be handled. They got handled last night, and they didn't like it, and they tried to find a scapegoat when it came to officiating both of those games in my
opinion. What are we doing? All right, let me ask you this one, Freddie. There is a long-standing tradition in basketball of trying to set up the next game officiating tone.
Absolutely.
Yep. Now, typically, it's been coaches in the past who have done this. They get up to the presser and they complain about the officiating, and they're trying to get into the heads of the officiating crew.
Right.
And remarkably, it seems to have worked because it is a staple in playoff basketball.
True.
So while I certainly want to agree with you that, hey, Joel Embiid, you guys had an 8-point lead. I mean, you guys gave him 8 points in 27 seconds. LeBron, you had a 20-point lead, and you found a way not to win. You found a way not to choke out the champ. Could both of these guys be playing 3D chess with us and we're just not getting it? Are their complaints legitimate, or are they trying to set up the next game tone of officiating?
Well, as somebody who had to deal with this as a Knicks fan, when Phil Jackson and the Chicago Bulls were ruling the roost, this is exactly what he would do. This is page 1 through 800 out of the Phil Jackson playbook.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to say that that's not the case. I'll say it's more the case of LeBron James with the what are we doing. To me, Joel Embiid looked completely – I'm sure Joel Embiid's president, what are you doing? Joel Embiid looked defeated. As if to say, man, I put it all on the line, and that's what happened. The officials took this away from us. He even said after the game that – they are the better basketball team after the first two games, even though they're down 0-2 to the New York Knicks.
Oh, man. Now, don't say that, Joel.
No, he can say it. He's wrong to say it, especially when they were not the better team in game one. I'll grant that they were the better team in game two. I'll see that because
the better
they
team
were,
won. No, it doesn't work like that. Better team won.
I'm hearing you.
Okay.
I agree with you. If he wants to say he thought the better team did not win in game two, all right, fine. That's how you feel, even though, come on now. As far as that goes, make plays down the stretch.
Right.
You had plenty of chances to make plays down the stretch. You had a chance to finish those basketball games. But to your point, Chad Brown, this is definitely part of the Phil Jackson peyote mind trick that worked for him when he's with the Bulls head coach and the Los Angeles Lakers. Watch there be a more favorable official whistle when it comes to Game 3 in Philadelphia on Thursday or Game 3 in Los Angeles, because officials have conversations. Officials see things, and it's a human reaction to say, we want to make sure that we don't get in the middle of this. So how do you do that? You make sure that maybe you go the other way a little bit more because of the Jedi mind tricks that LeBron James has been playing and that Joel Embiid tried to play last night.
I mean, we see these games. They come down, literally, the Laker game came down to a last-second buzzer-beater shot by Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, his ability to step back and create space over a 7-footer, the footwork involved in that. I mean, all sports are footwork, but the footwork by Jamal Murray was just damn impressive. Damn impressive.
And he said he never saw the game-winning shot because he said he shot it and fell into the bench, and he said he heard the crowd reaction, so he said, I must have done something great. I must have won this game. He never saw the game-winning shot that he actually shot over Anthony Davis.
Whether he saw it or not, I saw it, and it was incredibly impressive. But my point I was trying to make here, Freddie, is these games come down to literally one possession.
Yes.
And if your ability to go up to a press conference, and while we may think it makes Joel Embiid look like a bit like a fool, and he's disconnected. And LeBron, you're not saying you were down, you had a 20-point lead, mm-hmm. and you sound a little bit foolish here. But if you can tilt the officiating just enough to get one or right. two more possessions,
yes.
that could be enough to win one of these games.
Well, when it comes to the Sixers.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Especially from the Philadelphia 76ers standpoint, because they plan to file a grievance with the NBA over the officiating, not just from last night, Chad, over the first two games of this series. That's what a team spokesperson told ESPN. Apparently, the Philadelphia 76ers have become Frank Costanza. They don't want this Festivus for the rest of us when it comes to the officiating and the New York Knicks in this series. So they're airing their grievances. I don't know where it's going to land, how it's going to work, but they plan to file a grievance or the officiating over the first two games when it comes to the Sixers. That's what a team spokesperson told ESPN.
I think this even goes even further into that. Phil Jackson just planting the seed, getting mm-hmm. the officiating crew, yeah. getting the league office to talk about this, getting all those folks together on a conference call based off of this yep. filing of a grievance.
Yep.
They're just simply trying to get into the heads yep. and let's steal a possession or two with the officiating crew. Really smart play. Super smart play.
Yeah. And if it doesn't work out for them to win in game three, then it'll be all for nothing with those grievances being aired by Joel Embiid of the Sixers and LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers. After both of those teams lost game two in that kind of fashion last night in the NBA. He is Chad Brown. Hit him on Twitter at ChadBrown94. I'm Freddie Coleman. Hit me on Twitter at ColemanESPN. We're in for Mike Greenberg today. Thanks for joining us on Greeny on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app and Sirius XM Channel 80. We are a little bit less than 2 days away from the NFL draft happening in Detroit, Michigan, but we're going to go back into the past and have the E word when it comes to a eulogy and that draft class that could affect this one coming up on Thursday. It's Greeny on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
What are we doing?
Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first Mother's Day or your fashionista mom who loves to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate them both. You can shop by price, anywhere from $25 and under to $100 and under. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, pre-wrapped gifts or gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th. It'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. Head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Greeny, the podcast.
Here's Chad Brown. I'm Freddie Coleman and from Mike Greenberg. Thanks for joining us on Greeny on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80. And don't forget to tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. So who's going to have that good life at the NFL draft 2 days from now? Round one in Detroit, Michigan. Rounds two and three on Friday. Rounds four through seven on Saturday. Let's bring in Louis Riddick, ESPN NFL analyst. Like Chad Brown, played in the NFL, also was an administrator in the NFL, does a great job covering the NFL. Hit him on Twitter at LRiddickESPN. By the way, if you deal with a dead battery, head to AutoZone. They're America's number one battery destination. They offer free battery services like free battery testing and free battery charging. Their free battery testing can help you know if you need a new battery or not, or if you're in need of a fresh charge. If you do happen to need a replacement battery, they can help with that too. They're the only place you can find proven tough Duralast batteries batteries. So the next time you're having battery trouble, head to AutoZone, your battery solution and America's number one battery destination.
Jets traded quarterback Zach Wilson and a seventh round pick to Denver in exchange for a sixth rounder.
There is some onus on the player, but in many ways, this is a Jets failure.
I like this for the Broncos. I mean, it costs them nothing. It's a buy low scenario. They can see if they can develop him, see what you got in him.
So, Lewis, we know you'll be part of the draft coverage on ESPN and also ABC. We look at this year's quarterback class. A lot of people loving, not loving some of those quarterbacks, whether it's Caleb Williams out of USC, Jaden Daniels out of LSU, Drake May out of North Carolina, J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan. But we go back to the 2021 draft class. What should that class tell us about risk and reward when it comes to addressing that position in the draft when it comes to this year, my friend?
Well, I think, Freddie, the thing that every front office is always trying to do is not always, well, obviously they're trying to get the player on the field correct in terms of the evaluation, strengths, weaknesses, what he needs to work on, what he needs to make more consistent, more repeatable, so his play can become more consistent, more repeatable. So, I mean, there's always room to improve as far as your ability to evaluate that. Evaluate how players are able to improve once they get to your place, whether it be in your building or with private coaches and the like. But I think the more important thing, well, there's two more important things that I think that people are really always still now, when you look at that draft class or any other quarterback that has failed, you know, whether it be a singular quarterback or draft classes overall, what you're trying to improve on the most is getting the player right in terms of who he is. Who are the people around him that are going to be influencing the most? What motivates him? Is he intrinsically motivated? Just what kind of mental horsepower, what kind of sustainability does he really have to kind of grind it out for 6 months a year when you're in season, the other 6 months still grinding it out, still trying to get better, trying to make everyone else better? Is he really dedicated to the game? Those are the areas where I think in front offices, especially in my time, and even now, that people – that's where the inexact science really comes into play, because you just don't know, because you're trying to get at the authentic individual. But a lot of times, man, these guys don't show you who they really are, and you can't really project accurately, or you misevaluate who they are going to be once you get them in your environment, which brings me to the second point. We always talk about the failures of the players as if we are, you know, under the assumption that all 32 teams have the very best to offer every single player at every single position in terms of coaching, mentoring, development. And that's just not the case. Just talk to quarterbacks around the league who were dying, desperate for feedback in terms of how they could get better, and desperate for answers when they were on the football field, on the practice field, in the classroom. And quite honestly, couldn't get them to the point where they felt as though it was helping their game. I think that's where teams really need to, from ownership, team president, general manager on down, make sure that they're self-scouting. Make sure that you really do have competent individuals in there and not just guys who happen to benefit from being buddies with the GM or the head coach and what have you. But they are the best of the best, because – look, it's just too easy to sit here and say, well, you know what, 50% of these guys just bust. And that's just the nature of the beast, because some of these guys suck, some of these guys are good, and we really don't know what the hell's going to happen. We're just going to roll the dice out there. No, it's a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more detailed, and there's a little bit more under control than that. And I think a big part of that is what I just mentioned about making sure you understand who you are as an organization.
All right, Lewis, so let's take that a step further. Now, obviously, you talked about the evaluation of the player, but what teams seriously do a self-scout and evaluate their ability to – it's obviously we're talking about quarterbacks, because they're probably going to be the first three picks in this draft – to benefit that quarterback. Do we have a quarterback coach in place? Do we have somebody in the weight room who can turn this guy not into a stronger football player, but a more flexible athlete who can withstand the punishment of that position? All these critical pieces along the way, what percentage of teams do that kind of self-scouting? Not the player scout, their own self-scouting about their organizational ability to elevate this guy and make him a better player.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in my time, the best way I can answer that for you, Chad, is to say, look, in my time, the people who I've been around, I'll just point to the guy who I know does this kind of self-scouting the most. And it hasn't been perfect, but he damn sure has made the adjustments and learned from the things that he didn't quite get right to where right now he's the standard as far as tie-in between coaches, front office, weight room, training room, and then ultimately what happens in terms of the performance on the field. And that's Andy Reid in Kansas City. Okay, I saw him in Philadelphia bring along Donovan McNabb, work to develop Kevin Cobb, bring in Michael Vick, move on to Kansas City, bring in Alex Smith, coach Alex Smith to have one of the best, have his best season of his entire career, build the quarterback room in order to make sure that Patrick had a very stable environment between him, Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy. Then, if you branch it out, having that relationship with Brett Veach, who's now the general manager, mm-hmm. who looks at his scouting department and his scouting staff and says, do I have the best people in the most critical areas of the country to make sure that we are getting the best evaluations on these players? When we bring them in-house, are they getting the best in terms of weight training, nutritional advice, treatment in the training room? Who I know the people down there in Kansas City. I know that Rick Burkholder, who heads the training room down there, is second to none, and that they are constantly evaluating all of those things, how it affects the players on the football field, making sure that these guys are good physically, they're good mentally, they're good at home, they're good once they come into the building. If they're not good when they get in the building, how can we help them get better once they get in the building? And you see it manifest itself in, over the past 2-3 years, their rookie classes have really, besides Patrick Mahomes, who obviously is one of one, their rookie classes, their young guys, have taken hold of this franchise, this football team, and they are set, man. They're set for the next 5, 6, 7 years. And Brett's going to have to make some tough choices about which one of these young guys that they've been able to bring in under their umbrella and really benefit from the program that they have in place, which one of these guys that they're going to sign, which ones are they going to let go, like they just did this year with Legarius Sneed, who they couldn't afford to keep, but they have a bunch of young guys who they drafted, brought in, developed, took care of, and now they've become critical players. I think that team right now, from A to Z, is the one that really – people need to look at and go, what has Andy got going on between him, mm-hmm. the football operation overall, the general manager, that is allowing them to not, it's not just the Patrick Mahomes show, although we know it starts there. There's so many good things going on and going right down there. I think that's the team. I mean, look, Green Bay obviously is doing a fantastic job. San Francisco has a hell of a setup out there. I know some of the people work out. They have a heck of a setup. In the AFC, look, Brandon Bean does a fantastic job. Ozzie Newsome, Eric DaCosta in Baltimore do a fantastic job of bringing guys in and taking a holistic approach to developing those guys. There's a couple, and I'll take, here's the other one right now. Right now, just make sure, you know, Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans, what they've got going on in Houston right now, Houston all of a sudden has become a destination spot for people. And there's a reason why. They like how the players play and how they respond to the culture that they have now. Not the one that they had a couple of years ago that we were all ripping apart, but the one they have now. Because they did look internally. D'Amico did get some things changed around there. Those are the places you got to watch and keep an eye on.
And that's a big reason why Andy Reid, general manager Brett Veach, and President Mark Donovan got extensions to keep him with the Kansas City Chiefs for more than a little bit longer. Louis Riddick, ESPN NFL analyst, joining Freddie Coleman and Chad Brown and for Mike Greenberg on Greeny on ESPN Radio. Real quick, Louis, before we let you go, if I say this team is the most intriguing team picking the top 10 of the draft, who is that team according to you and why?
For me right now, it's definitely – it's Washington because of the fact that I'm just wondering if they're just going to go ahead and make the no-brainer pick to me, which is Jaden Daniels, or is there something going on there between them, Jaden, that maybe they don't feel fits them just right? Are they, you know, look, and I know, look, Adam Peters brought in all these quarterbacks, you know, within a week of the draft and wanted to get one final look at them, one final evaluation in terms of what kind of person they were. Like that to me, I've been involved in that kind of situation where when you're taking it up to the 11th hour like that, it's simply because there isn't a consensus yet. You aren't quite 100% sure what you want to do with your pick. We did it in 2004 when we drafted Sean Taylor, where we literally flipped the board the day of the draft between number one and number two, and we moved Sean from two to one.
Right.
So that's the most intriguing one for me. I don't know if it's a slam dunk with Jaden right now, and that is intriguing as hell to me, considering the fact that I think he should go number one overall. So we'll see.
No doubt. Hey, Lewis, enjoy the draft. Oh, it's a pleasure, my man. Take care and be well.
Thanks, Lewis.
Of course. Thank you.
Great stuff by Lewis Riddick, ESPN NFL analyst. Hit him on Twitter at LRiddickESPN. Joining Freddie Coleman and Chad Brown in for Mike Greenberg on Greeny on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. You can save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. You can do that by visiting progressive.com. By the way, Jaden Daniels from LSU, -500 ESPN bet now to go number two overall to the Washington Commanders. And that's why we had the 2021 draft class that we kind of compared it to, Chad, with Lewis Riddick, because we saw the 49ers did, trading up, the giving away a haul for Trey Lance. They didn't keep that mistake in the building. The Jets overdrafted a guy by the name of Zach Wilson, and it turned out they didn't keep that mistake in the building. They couldn't keep that anymore. They traded the Denver Broncos yesterday. It's amazing how, and you made this point before we got started, so many teams don't look at past mistakes and say, be careful, because they don't believe, according to you, Chad, I thought you were spot on with it, they don't believe that's going to happen to them.
Yeah, I'm a smart guy. Everyone else is dumb. I got this whole thing figured out. I can't believe those other 31 teams are as foolish as they are. It's amazing that these mistakes happen every single year. And, you know, Lewis just broke down the multitude of factors of why some of these guys aren't successful. And it's more than just that the player sucks, they misevaluate the player.
Mm-hmm.
But it's human nature. When something goes wrong, we want to look outside of ourselves.
Right.
And a football organization is run by human beings. In some cases, human beings with tremendous egos. You think I've yet to meet this humble billionaire. you know what I'm saying? I've yet to meet this head football coach who's just the humblest guy on the planet. There's a certain confidence and swagger that comes with that elevated status in life. And so they are obviously going to look outside of themselves as to why this failure happened. It's because of the player. It's because he wasn't mature enough, because the scouting department didn't dive deep enough into his background to find his true football IQ, mm-hmm. as opposed to looking in within the organization. Did we give this kid the best chance for success with everything that we did? If you're going to expend the draft capital, now the salary cap, the rookie salary cap, has made the salaries more digestible than they ever have been in the past.
Right.
But with the draft capital, when you are drafting in the top five, hopefully you're not there very often. And when you're going to use that pick, it seems like you would have this overwhelming obligation to ensure that every piece of your organization is buttoned up, and far too many teams make the pick without the self-scout of themselves within that process.
And that's what leads me to Zach Wilson. As much as he did not succeed in New York, the New York Jets did not do him any favors, because – to me, they overdrafted him and then anointed him the starter, not knowing exactly what kind of organizational structure was going to be necessary that had to involve him being successful, dealing with everything that the New York media and that the New York City area is going to be. The minute that he looked overwhelmed, they kept trying to push that through and they did not give him the proper resources to improve upon himself to overcome that situation. So he became a New York nightmare, because the Jets should not have drafted him that high in the first place, and they didn't do him any favors, in my opinion, by making sure that he could be a better quarterback. They just insisted. He's the face of our franchise. He's the guy that we decided over a Trey Lance, over a Mac Jones, over a Justin Fields. Those guys went after Zach Wilson. They were hell-bent on proving to people they were right and did not do right by Zach Wilson, put him in better situations where he could be a better quarterback, despite being overdrafted at number two, in my opinion.
Lack of confidence is just like any other injury you can have to your body. It affects the way that you play. It affects your way that you can rebound from a bad play. And when I see coaches continue to push people out there who are lacking in that internal sense of confidence, and they don't do things during the week to build that up,
they're
doing a disservice to these guys. You're just eroding away at that person's mental psyche and their mental toughness in those moments. And you don't give him any chance for success, any chance to recover from that.
Right.
So, yeah, to your point, Freddie, He was done incredibly wrong. We'll see what happens here in Denver, but I think Sean Payton's first task here in Denver with Zach Wilson is to spend a year of mental rehab with him to try to get his confidence going again. Before we even worry about footwork and arm angles and all those other things, let's get your mind right where your previous ability that you had at BYU can begin to flourish.
Especially with no pressure on him because nobody's expecting anything about Zach Wilson going to the Denver Broncos for late draft picks. He has a chance to really have a clean slate and start from ground zero to see if he can make that work, unlike when he did not do that with the New York Jets. By the way, every pick of the NFL draft, you can hear it right here on ESPN Radio on Thursday. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. Eastern time and runs all the way from pick number one to the last pick Mr. Relevant is taken on Saturday night on that day. Chris Canty, Chris Carlin, Ian Fitzsimmons, Mike Tannenbaum, Jordan Reed have the NFL draft right here on ESPN Radio starting at 7 o'clock Eastern time on Thursday. He's Chad Brown and Freddie Coleman in for Mike Greenberg. Thanks for joining us on Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. And have you ever heard of a situation in which a manager or a coach got thrown out of a game while checking his fingernails? That happened yesterday. We'll tell you who it happened to next. This is Greeny on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Greeny, the podcast.
I'm Freddie Coleman. He's Chad Brown. We're both in for Greeny, in for Mike Greenberg on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. Sirius XM Channel 80. Don't forget about us on TuneIn and always tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. The phone number is always there for you to join the Greeny line at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. So if you're Aaron Boone, you probably never thought in a million years in your baseball career that you'd be tossed from a game not just 5 seconds in, literally five pitches in, but while looking at your fingernails. That's what happened yesterday as the New York Yankees lost to the Oakland Athletics. 5 pitches in, he was ejected because Hunter Wendelstedt, the umpire, the home plate umpire, told Aaron Boone and his staff to shut it down after they thought a guy swung at a pitch even though it hit him. And Hunter Wendelstedt had enough of that. Aaron Boone was looking at his fingernails. A fan said something behind the Yankees dugout, and Hunter Wendelstedt said, "You're out of here." Aaron Boone, in a very profane way, said, "It wasn't me." And Hunter Wendelstedt said, "I don't care. I made my decision." I'm paraphrasing. Believe me, it got very profane. Afterwards, Aaron Boone was calm, but still unhappy.
Aaron, how do you wrap your head around what happened in the first inning?
Hard to. I wasn't even really, I really didn't even go after Hunter. You know, I was more upset that, you know, on the appeal, and I said, "Hunter, you can call it too." And he came back at me pretty hard, to which I didn't respond. I just said, "Okay." Went down, and it's embarrassing. It really is a bad, it's embarrassing.
I mean, everybody can see the video, but is that a scenario where you reach out to Major League Baseball about that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, but just not good.
If anybody can air a grievance about bad officiating, it can definitely, Chad Brown, be Aaron Boone after that, whatever that was yesterday. if Major League Baseball is not calling Hunter Windelstein on the carpet to say, dude, what are you doing? And then you double down on it by saying, I don't care. I heard it. You're out of here. I wonder what Major League Baseball is going to do, because that was embarrassing yesterday when all that happened.
It's so embarrassing. So embarrassing. And it just, again, technology has come so far, not just for us as fans to be able to see when they get these calls wrong. And obviously that was a wrong call to eject Aaron Boone by Whittlestat. The live action possibility of being able to insert yourself, if you're the league office,
right,
whether it's baseball or football or whatever sports that's out there. LeBron was talking about the replay possibilities in basketball earlier. When you have that technology at your fingertips to be able to correct the call in real time, and leagues don't take advantage of this because, what, there's an umpires union, there's an officials union, they don't want to upset these guys.
Mm-hmm.
They erode our confidence in those crews and their,
right,
ability to officiate and call the game properly. And so, again, I talked about this earlier. We are at a time in America where people can be very divided and can see conspiracies where there may not be one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think these sports have about a year or so window where they need to make a plan to insert themselves quickly and in real time and hopefully as seamlessly as possible into correcting calls as soon as they are done incorrectly to keep up the integrity of the game, because it's starting to affect,
yeah,
the fans' interpretation of the integrity of the game. With all the sports wagering going around,
mm-hmm,
that's obviously creates a situation where we can have doubts about people's motives and how they're doing things. And if you allow a bad call to stand and you are a league and you allow an officiating error to affect a game, you're affecting the integrity of a game and our ability to buy into the real outcome being determined on the field.
What sport? I mean, we can put out what sport has the officiating problem, the most officiating problem. I don't know if it's a broad question, but I say it is a broad question because based on what you just said, especially when no longer are we looking at betting and gambling with the kind of stigma that was put out there for the longest time when it came to any sport. I don't care if it's baseball, I don't care if it's football, I don't care if it's basketball. The minute that you mentioned betting and gambling, people, no. Now, because there's so much money to be made from it, and now it's legal in just about every state in the union, and people are getting their greedy hands on that money, that's when it really takes center stage. So I want to say that there's an officiating problem because there are going to be missed calls. But if any sport I think has to worry about that the most, it's probably basketball. Because there's a certain guy that brought that to the table called Tim Donaghy, where he literally compromised the game as an official. That, to me, Chad, was a paradigm shift because people looked at officiating with a slanted eye anyway, with a side eye. When all that happened and what he was doing for God knows how long, that really brought officiating problems, in my opinion, to a center stage. And now that they have that stage, all the scrutiny that's going to go with it, especially what happened last night involving the Knicks and the Sixers and the Lakers and the Nuggets in the NBA.
I watch the NBA, and I would say at least once a half in every single NBA game that I've seen in the last couple of weeks, there is a phantom call. And it's
right,
radio, so people can't see me doing my quote-unquote fingers. But you a call is made, and you know the player turns to the ref, and he's got to quickly turn back around because he doesn't, mm-hmm, want to get a technical,
yeah,
because he did not touch the guy attempting the shot. There was no contact whatsoever. So this is it's already to the point where we accept that. And we almost expect that. But now, again, with this wagering part of the game now being more and more prevalent and prominent,
mm-hmm,
in all our psyches, I think the NBA has to find a way to jump in and correct these calls. It's a fast-flowing game. It's a difficult game. These athletes are more athletic and faster and skilled than ever before.
Yeah.
So I don't say the officials suck. I know they have a very difficult job in all the major league sports. But again, the leagues have the ability, due to technology, to correct these calls very quickly,
yeah,
in a seamless way. It's not going to affect the flow of the game. And when they don't take advantage of that, they allow those other thoughts to creep into our heads, which are not very good thoughts about the league, its integrity, and whether we should buy into the outcomes.
I think technology real quickly has made officiating scared officiating. Because you got that kind of big brother mentality lording over you, and you think, well, no matter what call I make, if we have to look at it, we have to look at it. I wonder how much technology has made officials more scared than ever before. in terms of officiating a game, whether it's basketball, baseball, football, etc. Feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shaves start with Barbasol Shaving Cream. That's Barbasol Shaving Cream, an American classic for over 100 years. Close Shave America, Close Shave Barbasol. He is Chad Brown and Freddie coming in for Mike Greenberg on Green and ESPN Radio. One of the best doubleheaders in NBA playoff history, unless you live in Philadelphia or Los Angeles. That's next.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.